Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Christy Jones about hiring your first sales rep. Christy has more than 15 years of SaaS sales management experience. She helps founders build, grow, and scale their sales team by improving process, strategy, and people to accelerate revenue. Welcome to the show, Christy.
Natalie, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
And wear makeup for the first 3 weeks.
And we're in 3 weeks. So
tell us, how did you get started working with the SaaS companies?
Like all good people, I fell into it accidentally. I had been actually a buyer with what's now Macy's. So I got out of college with a journalism degree and went into retail. And then when I decided that corporate retail life was not for me, the very first company I went to work for, a small privately owned company selling e-learning and learning management systems. And again, back in the day, I've been in SaaS so long, we didn't call it SaaS, we called it subscription model. My first SaaS company was back in 2000. So I spent 10 years there as a VP of sales. And pretty, with one exception along the way, every other company I worked for was SaaS. And then I got the VC-backed SaaS bug. So very small, fast-growing companies with some funding. But SaaS is sort of my swim lane now.
Cool. Well, primarily, almost all of our listeners, probably except for a few, are bootstrapped though. Making the first hire is challenging, and especially hiring a sales representative. So today we're going to be talking about exactly that. But I think what we're not going to talk about is the things that you need to have in place even before making the hire. For example, you probably already know that you need to hire a sales rep, because even before you're making the first hire, you probably think about maybe it should be someone else on the team. You probably already have your, hopefully, mission, vision, your strategy, how you're going to achieve those results. We're not going to talk about culture or company values. Hopefully, you're also going to have that in place. If not, then listen to some previous episodes that we talked about. You also need to have communication guidelines in place, because if you're hiring, if this is going to be your first hire period in your entire life and you have not managed anyone in the past, this is going to be challenging. Like, there's going to be a learning curve for sure. So make sure that you have all of those things in place. And now let's switch to talking about making the first sales hire.
Perfect.
So where do we start?
You know, you need to start with the job description. So writing a good job description. So I say the job description is to the company what the resume is to the candidate. So it's the candidate's very first look inside your company, tells them, you know, again, subtly will tell them things about the company that you may not even realize. So, you know, I say there's, you know, three or four components of a good job description. You want to tell them a little bit about the company. You want to tell them a little bit about the position. You want to firmly outline what's non-negotiables, if you will. So expectations, whether that be a college degree, you know, how many calls we're going to have to make a week, what are you expecting them to bring to the company? And then I call it kind of the big red bow. So as all good startups, there are some perks, right? So casual dress, beer fridge, as I like to call it, you know, foosball table, if you have that, remote work environment, you know, whether, you know, even without COVID. So put a big red bow on it. You really need to sell yourself. Like you said, if, you know, a lot of SaaS tech companies have very great mission, vision, values. And so share those with you. I had a really fun SaaS company that I worked for a while as a consultant who said, you know, we like to break out movie quotes at any particular time. You never know what's going to happen around here. So give them some flavor of the personality of your company too. Draw them in. You know, again, once they've gotten to the bottom of the job description, they haven't disqualified themselves. If they're still reading, that's them, right? And so give them some reasons why they would choose your company or want to apply to your company over others, because working for a startup is very different than working for other companies. So give them a flavor of what a day in the life might be like.
Do you have any examples, for example, maybe on your website, of good job descriptions that we can just link to the show notes?
You know what? I will put a few job descriptions out there. I've written a few recently. So one of the things I offer my clients, because they've never done this before, I call it hiring help. So yes, I've written a few job descriptions recently that I will send over to you that you can put on the show notes for sure.
Sounds good. So we have the job description. What's next? Where do we post it?
Well, one of the things we got to think about is just that. So I ask all of my clients when I'm providing hiring help for them to post it on a paid LinkedIn job site, the job application. So A, you want to put it on your website for sure, right? I'm not a big fan. I mean, again, Indeed and those type of services will pick it up if it's on LinkedIn. But when you put a paid job search out there on LinkedIn, you know, I'm getting anywhere between 30 to 50 resumes a week when a client posts that and they get sent over to me. And you can set a budget limit. So this isn't like, oh my gosh, I just got a $400 bill from LinkedIn. You basically set, it's kind of like SEO. You set the limit every day as to how many times you want it viewed. And once it's been clicked X number of times, it cuts off. If you want to throw more money at the project, you can do that. So I feel pretty strongly about that. Obviously your network as well. So I think a piece that people miss is if you have hired a few people for your startup, chances are they're probably cultural fit or cultural ad, if you will. And so make sure that everybody in the company puts that on their LinkedIn page and shares that link to the website or to the LinkedIn posting, because more likely that if somebody calls a friend and says, hey, I saw your company's hiring, that gives that friend a chance to talk them through that and talk about that. So, you know, again, I'm a huge LinkedIn advocate. I have been using LinkedIn paid job ads with my clients for 2.5 to 3 years with extreme success.
So right now we're talking primarily for the position to be based out of an office, right?
Again, depends, but I would say most of my clients if they're hiring their first or second sales rep, which is normally the case with my clients, they like them in the office because they're trying to build culture. And again, assuming that founder has played first sales rep for a while, which is typically the case, right? As it should be, then the founder's going to want to be close to that person, wants to overhear conversation. So there's so much, I mean, again, remote work is possible, but there's so much that I call it management by walking around. So, if, you know, in a smaller office with very few people, founder's going to overhear phone conversations or something comes back in an email and somebody just turns their chair and says, hey, how do I handle that? So I would say most of my SaaS clients, early stage startups, are in the inside sales environment.
So hopefully LinkedIn is where we're able to post the job. We put some money behind that. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully some other job boards are going to pick it up. And then people are going to start applying. And even before that, do we disclose our salary or structure, like payment structure?
We definitely disclose in the job description our payment structure, our compensation structure, but not what we're compensating for exactly. So I always say base salary plus variable compensation, benefits, 401k, stock options if you have them. Again, casual dress, you know, lunch on Wednesdays, those type of things are all benefits that need to be included in. So I definitely lay out the structure itself that it's base plus commission. Because again, some that may eliminate some people that go, oh, I didn't know that was a commission job. I don't want to do that. So definitely lay out the compensation structure.
Nice. Let's talk a little bit more about that. So base plus commissions. How do you actually structure that?
So when I work with my clients, I kind of give them a range so they know what to expect. I pay base salary based on experience. So no two people are ever going to be paid the same. I made two offers to two candidates with two different clients in the last 2 weeks, both very different. And so, you know, I know the range that we should be paying, but again, I do want to pay based on experience level. I'm happy, you know, again, most of my clients are happy to pay a little more to get better. And then variable compensation can vary. So if we're talking, you know, a lot of the founders that I have, in fact, one of the offers I made last week was for a founder who wanted somebody to just do appointment setting. So an SDR role, right? So he wasn't ready to bring in another account executive. He was really preferring to home grow, but wanted to do that in the way of having this SDR appointment set, then sit on the appointments with him and kind of do the career pathing that way. And so in that case, normally I recommend compensating SDRs by, you know, a flat rate based on the number of appointments that are set, and then how many of those appointments go into the pipeline. Account executives, flat percentage based, you know, somewhere between 8 and 12%. Of revenue generated, of gross revenue. So not margin, but straight gross revenue, annual contracts. And then customer success folks based on, again, I pay a fairly high percentage based on upsell, cross-sell, because that's really net new revenue. And then a lower percentage, somewhere between 3 and 5% for renewals. So it depends on if we're doing self-serve, you know, how we're doing it. But you're going to see, I'd like to see a 50-50 split with account executives, so quota carrying reps. I like to see 70-30 based variable compensation for SDRs. I like to see about the same for customer success or account management, so 70-30, 60-40. So more heavy on the base side because there is a lot of servicing going on with those. I want them doing their quarterly business reviews or executive business reviews. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot more putting out fires, if you will, on the customer success side where they can't always control.
So there are multiple sales roles, right, within a company that we can potentially think about hiring. How do we know which roles are there, and how do we know which role is a good fit for where I am at?
Good question. So as the founder, you know, again, assuming you've been playing sales rep, which is usually the case, do you want to continue playing sales rep? But most founders either A, don't have time to prospect, or don't want to prospect, or no offense, suck at it. And so if you really don't want to prospect, or you're not good at it, and that really shouldn't be how you spend your time, by the way, maybe thinking about hiring an SDR, which would be the cheapest way to go, if you will, still find a college graduate. You know, we're talking still probably about between 45 and 60 total compensation in that situation. If you're tired of playing sales rep and you need, let's say you're in seed mode and you need to go out and do some fundraising, you need some additional cash, and that's very time consuming for founders. Maybe it is time to hire an account executive, but you can spend 4 to 6 weeks with before you kind of go off to do some other things. An experienced SaaS rep should be able to come in and kind of hit the ground running once they understand your product and value proposition. And then, you know, listen, once you've got 30 or more customers, you're probably going to need someone to manage those accounts. A lot of customers come in, particularly with early stage startups, kind of at a lower level. I call it tip their toe in the water. So there's probably a lot of upsell opportunity within those. Plus, again, you don't want your higher level executives or higher paid individuals at the company servicing people on a daily basis that just need, like, you know, again, I don't know how to run this report, or how do I set up my dashboard, or, you know, again, password reset, something crazy like that. So, you know, at some point you need all three of those at some point. The biggest mistake I see founders make is they don't understand the difference between hunters and gatherers. And more likely than not, when I come into a company and they're struggling with revenue and sales, it's because they've hired a gatherer, someone who really should be managing accounts instead of hunting for new net new business. It's the hardest thing for them to figure out, no doubt.
What results can we expect and put in our contracts for each of those roles?
When you're putting your offer letter together, you really need to think about the compensation structure needs to be in there, so it's not a mystery, right? So I make my clients all put in like an appendix A with the variable compensation structure. So you need to list base salary, you need to list PTO, you need to list benefits, you need to list variable compensation. If there's a change in compensation, so if you're going to look at a base salary review in 6 months, you should put that into the offer letter. So anything that anything that you want to make sure that everybody's, I mean, again, like I always say, like nobody should have surprises. So, you know, I've seen offer letters where it says, you know, base salary of $50,000 plus variable compensation, but they don't spell out at all how they reach that variable compensation. Not fair, right? I mean, people need to know what they can expect to make and what's going to be expected of them. I actually also put quota. I put ramp up quota and ongoing quota for the first at least 6 months in the offer letter. Again, I'm not looking for any misexpectations.
What quota can we actually put for each of those roles? Is it different? Can we put it something like a little bit generic?
No, it's going to be very specific to your average sale, your sales cycle, all of that. So I work with my clients to set that up. Again, that's another struggle with founders, are not really sure how, you know, what fair quota looks like or how to ramp that up. Because I've been doing this for 20 years, I have an idea based on their average sale, their sales cycle, what we can do. So I do that custom for every client.
So what are some numbers that you're looking at? For example, their average LTV. What are some things that we need to have in front of us in order to make the decision on what quota we put in the offer?
I call it reverse sales math. So, you know, what are you expecting at the end of this year? Are you expecting $500,000, $1 million, $1.5 million? What is your average sale? Then that kind of tells you how many deals you need. Close rate's critical. On average, SaaS close rate is between 18 and 20%. And so divide that by close rate. That's how many deals are going to need to be in the pipeline. And how do we spread that out? Is there seasonality to your business or not? Sometimes there's seasonality. So I don't believe, like, again, one of the things I say to founders is, hey, it's not fair to give them the same number in July that you're giving them in January, because either A, seasonality, or B, you know, for SaaS companies, from my experience has been that 40% of revenue comes between September 1st and December 31st because of budgeting, right? So Q4 is your biggest quarter, Q1 is your next biggest quarter, Q3, Q2 in that order. Summer is a very challenging time to get a hold of people, vacations, people don't, you know, people are not around the offices often. So even if your business isn't seasonal, budgetary cycles have a seasonality of them, their own. And so you need to take that into account. No 2 months are probably going to be the same back to back.
Good. That's very interesting information. What about once we start getting those applicants, how do we go through them?
Yeah. One other thing, Natalie, I wanted to mention to you, because this is very specifically geared towards SaaS founders, is gender neutrality. No big secret here. And I'm happy that two ladies are on our podcast today. Couldn't be any happier about that. But the fact of the matter is we have an inclusion diversity issue, right? It's not a secret. Hashtag inclusion diversity has been floating around. And so for your show notes, I'll give you a website that people can run their job description through for gender neutrality. It will pull out words and it will say, that's a lot of masculine words in here, or there's a lot of feminine words in there, or it's neutral. We're shooting for neutral, right? Again, and it's a little bit tricky, but you also have to use specific words based on what we just talked about before, hunter versus gatherer, right? So, I mean, you're going to be using more aggressive words in your job description if you're looking for a true hunter, because those words won't scare them off. But if you're looking for a nurturer, if you will, or someone to manage your clients after the fact, onboard them, implement them, that's going to take a little more hand-holding, and we need them to be a little softer perhaps around the edges. And so, but you need to run those, you need to run that through there so that you know whether or not you have excluded a gender unintentionally, but it has happened. When the resume comes to you, so I'm looking for a few things, even on pieces of paper. I'm looking for how long they've been into the business world, right? How many years out of college? Most of my clients are looking for a college degree, so how many years out of college? And then what are the jobs they've chosen out of college? And are we improving ourselves with every job? So are we making more money? Are we getting more responsibility? You know, are we looking for the next big step? I also like former athletes. I also like former military leaders. I also like people that have worked their way through college, if I can figure that out. People who are joiners. Again, no big surprise.
What do you mean by joiners?
Joiners of clubs. So, I mean, they're extroverts, right? I mean, we're looking for social extroverts, because the salespeople should be social extroverts. And so, you know, were they the president of a glee club, if you will? Did they, you know, what kind of things did they get involved in? Charities, non-charities, doesn't matter to me, but I'm looking for joiners. And so, you know, I'm looking for progression. I'm looking for track record of success if it's listed on there. I'm a numbers junkie, right? This is a sales job. First thing I do is scan the resume for, you know, 40% increase year over year, made the president's club. I mean, I'm looking for things that indicate that they have had a track record of success. And those are like that kind of like, you know, that'll get them in the door. If they've had the job previously, like if they've had a job as an SDR, or they've had an account executive job or a customer success job previously, and I don't have to tell them what that means, you know, bonus points. Sometimes people even list on their resumes tech stack that they've used, like experience with Salesforce or Zoom Info or Outreach or Sales Loft. Like any prior technical experience just means one less thing I have to onboard and train them on, which means they get up and running more quickly. So again, as someone who's been hiring sales reps for 20 years, unfortunately, this doesn't take me long. So, but I am looking for very specific things. And again, those are really it. Like I'm looking for people who, again, winners, when winners get a taste of winning, they want more. And I'm looking for people who've had a taste of winning.
What's percentage rate of applicants versus those that you choose for interview process?
Yeah, not great. It's probably 10 or 15%. You know, again, for every 10 resumes, I probably phone screen one. So if I get 50 to 70 resumes, I'll probably phone screen 6 to 8. And again, God love everybody, but you know, people who just have no business. I mean, people who resume clearly says they want to be in marketing, applying for a hunter job, it's not going to work for me. So, you know, people like, you know, again, there's no harm in pushing the send button on your resume. I totally get that. And so, you know, it doesn't take long to vet through some of those people. The other thing I do, by the way, that would be of interest to this group is I compare I play private eye in my spare time with these things. I compare the resume to the LinkedIn. It's not matching up. That's always a red flag for me, or if there are things missing, whether that be from LinkedIn or from there. So I'm always comparing both. Doesn't mean I won't phone screen them, but it means I'm aware that there's a gap or they were trying to, you know, potentially hide something because maybe it was only 4 months or 5 months or things like that. So I'm always doing a quick comparison too.
Looking for red flags, Har.
I am.
So then let's say we have 5 to 10 people that we want to interview. What's the next step?
So I schedule that phone interview. These days I'm doing Zoom. I used to just do phone, but since we're all Zoom junkies now, I'm doing it over video. I do kind of try to tip them off that like, hey, I'm not going to have makeup on, so don't need to put your tie on. I don't even care if they come with their college hoodie on. Really don't care. It's not really important to me. Particularly, I think because I normally am hiring for startup SaaS company, you know, tech companies. So it doesn't really matter what they're wearing. And I ask so there are 30 minutes and I have a very strong, strict formula. And this is how it goes. I tell them that we're going to keep to 30 minutes. I tell them that we're going to go over their past, you know, prior experience. And I want to know 3 things about every job. I want to know your compensation structure. I want to know how you left the company better than you found it, i.e. what'd you bring to the table while you were there? And I want to know what I call RFC, reason for change. So why did you leave that company or why are you looking to leave your company? And I have them, and I decide how far back on the resume I go. I normally won't go further than 3 deep. So I normally won't go past 5 or 6 years back. So normally 1, 2, or 3 jobs, depending on how long they've been out of school. And those are the 3 things I want. And I, you know, I get base salary. I just interviewed a guy today for a candidate up in Madison, only to find out that he's a 6-figure guy and their job is about a $55,000 to $60,000 a year job. And they had already interviewed him. I was actually the last stop on the bus. And super frustrating for everybody involved, right? They just weren't comfortable. The founder was not comfortable asking that question. She didn't know how to get about doing it. And so when I did my write-up and sent it over, the very first thing I said is compensation. Like, he'd been at 75,000. He's now over 100,000. And you're not going to pay anywhere near that. And she's like, how'd you figure that out? I said, tell me about your compensation structure. You know what I mean? And she's like, she goes, yeah, you make that sound pretty easy. And honestly, like I have been I've got a very direct communication style. If you don't know that by now, we haven't spent enough time together today. And the way I say it, it's non-threatening, but it's very firm I used to have people back in the day beat around the bush. I haven't had anybody beat around the bush about that number in a long time. Now, again, assuming I'm getting an honest answer, but I always assume it's within $3,000 to $5,000 of what I'm being told. And so like, if we're off by 25 or 30,000, we got a problem. So you need to get that information. I told the founder today, I said, listen, nobody wants to waste their time, yours or theirs. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, he's now spent probably 2.5 hours interviewing with you, and this is not a good fit for him financially. And shame on him for not asking, and shame on them for not asking. Like, shame on everybody. So, you know, please get those qualifying questions. If you've got some deal breaker questions out there, and oh, by the way, compensation, if you're a startup founder, is a deal breaker. If you've got other deal breakers, like, hey, we don't have an office and you have to work remotely, or hey, we do have an office and I expect you to be in, or whatever your deal breaker things are, I get that out of the way in the first 30-minute phone screen so that I don't have to waste anybody's time going forward. So understand what your deal breaker questions are. Those are my 3 questions, but if you have a deal breaker question, you better throw that in.
And I see so many founders, what they do, they have like 5 to 10 people that they talk to and then they do not take notes. They don't have a spreadsheet. They don't have a list of questions that they ask every single person. And so it's just off the cuff, whatever, however the conversation goes, which is not the way to do that, right? If you want to evaluate those people, you need to evaluate their answers. And so you need to have specific questions. You need to document those answers that they give. And then later, after all the conversations are done, you just evaluate this on paper. So that you also don't bring your own feelings about this.
Yeah, so true. I didn't start out my consulting business helping people hire. I did it out of necessity because I got tired of seeing them screw it up and waste their money. I mean, they just don't have funding to waste like that, right? And so I was like, please, please, please let me help you. And I don't charge a fortune for it. And it's a flat fee. And I'm not like, again, I'm not a recruiter and I don't source. So I don't charge 25% of base salary or anything like that. Like I said, we're doing everything sort of on the cheap with LinkedIn postings and those type of things. But yeah, you got it. Like, I ask the same 3 questions with every candidate every time, take the same notes, and it's so much easier to separate the wheat from the chaff, if you will.
All right. So now we're down to difficult questions. Who do we choose?
Right. So you're going to choose people that fit your compensation structure and what you need there. People that have given good answers, the most important answer is the question around what did you bring to the table, right? So how did you leave the company better than you found it? That's the most important thing. I'm looking for people, it's particularly for startup founders, right? I say very clearly, and not everybody's a good startup candidate, by the way, but I say they have to be more willow than oak. So the wind is always blowing in a startup, and if they're going to break and be uprooted, that's a bad thing. So have they had some experience, you know, have they been in a Fortune 500 structured company where they wore their suit and tie every day? May not be a good fit. You'll be able to figure some of that out just from paper, right? So I'm, you know, normally again, out of the 6 to 8 that I interview, I normally will then do first formal face-to-face interview with probably 3 to 4. So some of them are going to have better answers than others. Some of them are going to be a better fit. Some of them I just had a better connection with, and I understand the culture of the client. So next step is a formal behavioral-based interview. So what I do, and Natalie, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give your listeners this. I have a sheet of competencies that I build behavioral-based interview questions around. So on my website, salesaccelerationgroup.com/salesboss, they'll be able to get two things, a list of competencies and sample interview questions against those competencies. So one of the things I do for my clients is I give them the list of like 15 or 16 competencies and say pick 6 or 7 and that are the most important for your company. I'm obviously, one of them is going to be sales skills. You don't need to worry about that. So I take care of that. But other things, teamwork, integrity, flexibility, entrepreneurship, ingenuity, risk-taking. Risk-taking is one I always recommend startup founders get. Independence, again, you're not going to get a lot of management and structure and fairness. Like if you're reporting to the founder, they've got all these other things going on. You need to be independent. Strategic thinking, objective judgment, those type of things. So I build behavioral-based interview questions. So I tell the candidates every question is going to start like, right? And the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And so please don't ask stupid interview questions. And if you need to know what that is, call me. I'll tell you what stupid interview questions are. But like, you know, what's your greatest weakness and that kind of stuff? No, put them in a scenario. And I say to them, like, use real names, use real company names, real coworker names, real boss names, real prospect names. Because it comes psychologically when they start to tell the story and they use real names, it starts to become vivid for them and it comes back even if it's been 2 or 3 years. And so I can start to peel back the onion, if you will, and figure out how they're going to react to a similar situation in this company. So hour-long interview with, and then at that point, up until now, I've been sort of like, you know, again, like not anybody, but maybe not the founder needs to be involved in the interview cycle. Like, so for me, I've done everything up to that point independently. But now I need to start bringing in people from the company. So at this point, who's going to be your, and again, who's, have a process. Who's going to do that first interview? Doesn't necessarily have to be the founder, but it has to be somebody who has potential interview skills, who understands what they're looking for. But like you said, because we're going to take notes, we're going to ask the same questions over and over again. You know, it needs to be somebody who's familiar with the questions, who understands that. It's not somebody we just pulled out of the break room, you know, and said, hey, do you have time to interview in an hour? It's very expensive to hire someone and it's more expensive when it fails. So give it the time and attention that it deserves.
I like how you mentioned do not necessarily hire someone who have previously worked in Fortune 500 companies. And especially if you're a really small company, right? Because founders can be wowed by all of that previous experience at big companies, but that's because they had all the structure, they had all of this onboarding done, right? And you kind of don't have a lot of those things, right? So you need to have a flexible person who is going to be able to even create those things for you.
That's right. Yeah, I say to founders or candidates, if you need a job description and a dress code, this is probably not a good fit for you, right? There's very few things in writing, you know, standard operating procedures, you know, processes and procedures. You know, I mean, that first e-learning company that I walked into, I created their first handbook when I got there. They didn't have a handbook, but we were getting above 20 employees and it was time for a handbook. Like you said, you know, somebody had to, you know, again, you wear multiple hats in a startup. So, you know, we needed a handbook. Somebody had to do it. I had the most employees. I won. Short straw.
So let's say that we finally chose someone. Now, is onboarding our next thing to talk about?
No, unfortunately, I'm the girl that wants to make sure you don't waste your money. So I have 2 more steps that I put candidates through. One of them is, again, the question to test or not to test, right? Assessments or not assessments. I'm an assessment person. I use a sales profile test by Wiley & Sons. It's a $300 test. I don't upcharge for it. It's a pass-through for my clients. I resell it from Wiley & Sons, but I don't make any money off of it because I think it's that important. And it's what I call ACT meets Myers-Briggs. So grab your number two pencil and go back to the cafeteria in high school when you took your ACT or SAT test, because that's what it's going to feel like. There's a very strong verbal and math portion. The most successful hunters, for sure, score high in numeric ability and numeric reasoning. So more important, the reasoning. So I call these puzzle piece people. So I used to say back in the day, Natalie, you're probably too young for this, but I used to say, when the clock radio broke, do you grab the trash can or the screwdriver? And I'm looking for people who grab the screwdriver, right? Strategic thinkers, objective judgment, puzzle pieces, like people who, they also have a mechanical nature. So they're mechanical in nature, and it could be their hobby. A lot of times when I ask top sales reps who score high on numeric reasoning, what you do in your spare time, I tinker with my motorcycle. I like to build birdhouses. I, you know, make cookies from scratch. Like, people who need to figure things out, they'll figure things out in your company too. I want to look for that. So I run them through a sales assessment, which gives me an opportunity to interview them one more time. In this interview, I flip the table, right? So if you've gotten to the point where I said it's time to go to the assessment, we like you and we want to offer you a job. And really the next step, I flipped the table and said, listen, this next interview is really about you getting comfortable with us. And so I use the assessment. And again, it's a profile. So it's not a pass fail. I have profiled my best sales reps over 20 years because most of my companies don't have 5 sales reps for me to profile, to build a profile of. So I profiled my best SaaS reps over 20 years and we compare them to the A players, right? Do they have the same characteristics? So again, it's, you know, energy level, it's independence, it's manageability, it's attitude, it's objective judgment, it's those type of things. And so at that point, I want the person who's going to supervise them in the room with me. So whether that's the founder or another member or COO or CTO, or I don't care who it is, whoever this person is going to report to directly, I need them in the room with me because I start to gel the manager and the employee together. I start to ask questions based on the profile that says, hey, it looks like you might like to handle this. You know, the chances are in this situation, you might do this. Is that correct? Yes. Manager, how do you feel about that? You know, I always ask things like, you know, independence and manageability is on that chart. So normally, again, a hunter is going to be, it's always a diagonal, higher in independence and lower in manageability. And so I say to the manager, and we want that, right? We want that in a tech startup. We want them to be highly independent, but we don't want them to be what I call cowboy. We don't want them out on the range by themselves, you know, doing their thing. So how do you want to be kept in communication? How do you want to know what's going on? Do you want an email every week? Do you want them to pop into your office first thing every morning? So I start to put expectations together and start to help them figure out how they're going to work together. And if there seems at some point to be a disconnect, like really, like you have to pretty much botch this interview to potentially not get the offer at this point. And we're probably down to one or two people. So if it's two people, somebody is not going to get the offer. But a lot of times we're down to one person at that point. So, you know, I say to them, listen, you're going to know as the candidate before we will know as the company, whether or not this is a good idea or not. You know, you've probably gotten enough feel for us. But I want to give them one last chance to ask all their questions, to ask the manager direct questions about whatever they want. Like, how often will we meet? You know, will you be call monitoring? Will you be doing, you know, will you be sitting in on demos? Will you be helping me with demos? Like, any question that they have, particularly someone who's not worked at a startup before, super critical. And when I know things about the founder or the person who's going to manage them and the company, I plant questions, right? Like, hey, I know you're getting ready to look for Series A funding. How much time is that going to take you? How much time will you be out of the office? Like, I don't want any surprises. So, you know, I call the candidates that I help place in my client companies 60 days afterwards and say, how is this different than you thought it was going to be? And I don't want to hear, like, holy cow, I was not prepared for this. Like, particularly because, like I said, you have to be a high risk taker, more willow than oak, pivoting, like, you know, so funny because pivoting's become the new word because of COVID. Startup founders have been pivoting for years. This is like, nobody is better positioned to deal with this right now than startup founders because we pivot all damn time and we don't care, right? We're changing messaging, we're pivoting, we're altering, we're enhancing or altering the product on a regular basis. So if that's going to make you crazy as an employee, we need to get all that vetted out before.
Cool. Now, are we ready for onboarding?
Yes. After offer letter, but that we really already talked about, but you know, offer again, you know, put everything in writing. It does need to be a written document, start date, you know, when, you know, all of the benefits that come with that, what are the quota expectations? Let's get all of that in writing. Once you've got the signed document back, then yes, we need to be thinking about onboarding. And again, startup companies suck at this. There's nothing worse than showing up on your first day and your laptop's not there and you don't, and your desk is filled with people's business cards or marketing materials or the stuff that just came back from the last trade show. This is your first, this is your first in-office impression, or this is the first impression. And again, if you're in the work from home situation, you know, they need a care package sent to the house, right? So I work real closely with my companies. So two things. One, like when they show up on the first day, whether that's in their home office or whether that's in your office, they need to feel loved and welcomed. Okay. Buyer's remorse happens for candidates just like it happens for prospects. And so don't let them walk in on the first day and nobody's there to greet them and there are no donuts and nobody and everybody's sitting there just staring at them. Like, please don't do that.
I hear from so many founders that, hey, now we're done hiring, but actually you are never done hiring, right? For this person. Right. And when they just start or even a few weeks down the road, they're still evaluating this. I cannot tell you how many times I hear founders complain that we just hired them and then a week later they're gone. Well, guess whose fault is that?
That is, right. Before I went out and started my own consulting company 4 years ago, my last real job, as I like to say, was with Gainsight, a customer success software company out of Silicon Valley. And after I had signed my offer letter and was 2 weeks from starting, a package came to the house. And in it was t-shirts and mugs and cheese and the wine and a nice letter from the CEO about how excited he was that I was starting. And my child wanders into the kitchen and says, "What's that?" I said, that's a love letter from my new company. You know what I mean? But it made my child was like, "Wow, really?" And I was like, "Yeah." It made me feel great. Everybody in the family felt great about that I had made a good choice. Like, it doesn't take that much to do that, right? I mean, God knows we love our branded material in startups, right? Hats and t-shirts and jackets. So do something to make them feel special. And then part two is something that, again, I help my clients with because they suck at it. I put a 2-week, hour-by-hour onboarding plan, written plan in place. And so it's everything from, you know, what I call instructor-led training. So like, you know, job shadowing, formal meet and greets with every department head or other people in the company, software training. So again, if you're using, again, a lot of my clients are using HubSpot as an example. HubSpot University has got some of the best resources on the planet. You need to assign them courses. If you're using other tech stacks, whether that be Zoom Info, DiscoverOrg, SalesLoft, Vidyard, doesn't matter. They all have training videos available. So blend and then, you know, they need to be reading blogs on the website. They need to, you know, get fully immersed in the website. They need to sit with the product people. They need to understand how the product works. So there's no shortage of things that they can be doing. And every day should be a blend and look a little different. And then the last 30 minutes of every day for for the first 2 weeks, if I'm involved, I normally schedule a 30-minute end of the day wrap up. So, you know, the worst thing that any employee can be doing is sitting at their computer, staring at the screen with no idea what to do. Like, it's the most horrible feeling ever because they feel like they're not earning their keep. They're not being productive. They're not learning anything. And again, buyer's remorse sets in quickly. So don't let that happen. So I always say to them things like, hey, if on the job training supersedes anything on this piece of paper. So if somebody comes over and says, hey, I'm getting ready to go to a demo, or hey, I'm getting ready to jump on a call. Do you want to sit in with me? The answer is yes, yes, yes. And then we just rearrange the schedule every day. The other thing, you need to throw a happy hour that first week. Please give them a lunch buddy the first 2 days. Like, don't make them sit at the desk by themselves after they got Chick-fil-A. You know, I mean, this is an opportunity to do some community bonding, company bonding. So there's so many little things that don't cost anything really. I mean, even if you go out together and everybody buys their own lunch and then they come back to the break room or the conference room and eat, you know, make them feel welcome. There's nothing more intimidating than being the new kid with only if there's only 8 to 12 employees, right? I mean, that's scary enough. You can't, because there's nowhere to hide. So the worst thing is everybody just kind of goes, everybody goes off and does their own thing. And you're sitting at your desk not knowing where the nearest fast food restaurant is.
Last thing, because we're running out of time, I really want to hear from you. How do we maximize our chances of success for that person besides doing the onboarding, which is huge, right? But what do we look out for? How do we set up the meetings right? How do we set up all of those KPIs right? And manage that on an ongoing basis, because then so that often what happens 3 months down the road or 6 months down the road, the founder comes and says, okay, so what have you achieved? And then it's nothing that founder expected.
Yeah. You have to, you know, again, you need to get with somebody who can help you get some of those KPIs in place, but they're, again, they're activity metrics and they're result metrics, right? So it depends on who they are. With SDRs, I spend a lot of time on activity metrics, right? What goes in must come out. As they get more experience, I move sort of towards results. If it's an experienced quota carrying account executive, then how many new pipeline deals, again, reverse sales math, right? We need $500,000 from you at an average sale of $25,000. We have a 20% close rate. This is all just reverse math. How many new deals do you need in the pipeline every month? So for AEs, I do have an activity metrics and it's new deals added to the pipeline, to the top of the funnel. And then, you know, here's what close rate should be. Here's what average sales should be. Here's what sales cycle looks like. Customer success, it's all about churn, right? It's about upsell and churn. And they need an upsell goal. They need an upsell and cross-sell goal. They need a net new revenue goal. And they need a churn or renewal rate. So if you're looking to retain 97% of your customers, they need to know that means we can only lose 2 customers this year, or we can only lose 5 customers this year. So again, when you talked about lifetime value and CAC and those type of things, you know, customer success is, that's a, you know, for every person you churn, not only are you looking, not only was a net new person already have that goal, now we have to add one more on top of that, because now we got to replace somebody. You know, now we thought we were going to get the water level to here, and now the water level dropped, and we got to go back at it again. So, you know, again, lots of great resources out there for SaaS founders. I mean, Saster. I mean, there's a million places where you can go and get some of these numbers. Feel free to reach out to me if you're unsure. I'm happy to help walk you through it. I'm always shocked at the number of people who can't do what I call sales math. So who don't understand how to take this is what I want at the end and take the aggregates of all of the pieces that go into that and come up with a, I need to have this many new deals in the pipeline, which means I need to talk to this many people or have this many discovery calls. So, I mean, if you need 10 new deals in the pipeline and only a third of the people you talk to go in the pipeline, or even if 2/3 of the, you know, go in the pipeline, you're still going to have to, you know, you have to talk to X number of people and have in a discovery call, which means you may have to make, you know, X number of calls to get to the discovery call. So, I mean, this is all just basic math, but people don't go to the whiteboard and do it.
How do we maximize our chances of this person succeeding? Do we need to set up multiple touch points, meetings every day, every week? Do we ask them to report to us, or do we go ourselves to them and just start asking questions?
Most people, again, the thing I hear most from candidates, and everybody has a different definition, but I hate to be micromanaged. And when you ask people what micromanaging means, because you need to, it normally means people are asking me things that they can figure out on their own. So I get frustrated with founders who don't understand how to work their CRM system or find some of that data. So I always say, you should be able to manage your sales rep, no matter what position of sales rep they are, to about 75% with your CRM system. If you're requiring them to have clean, you know, data hygiene and Salesforce or sales or HubSpot or whatever you're using. So CRM hygiene is important, but you need to have a one-on-one with them every week. If they need sales training, maybe you're not the person to do that. You might need to send them out for that. And then initially in the first like 45 days, you really do need to over-communicate, because it's not going to be about KPIs and metrics at that point. It's going to be about training. Like, what are you still not comfortable with? Like, I try to get all new reps on the phone so if I start them on a Monday, they're on the phone the following Monday. Because the longer I wait to get them on the phone, the bigger the fear factor comes. Because then they start to figure out what they really, like by Thursday or Friday, they're starting to really figure out what they don't know. And they're flipped out. And so I said to them, hey, listen, if I waited to put you on the phone till you knew everything, I'd never put you on the phone, right? So you have to jump in at some point. But at the end of every day, you need that debrief time to say, what words did you hear today you didn't understand? SaaS is full of acronyms. Boy, we love our acronyms. So you're like, I tell reps, just take a legal pad and write down everything you hear, even if it's like eavesdropping in the office that makes no sense to you. And when we do our 30-minute debrief at the end of the day, ask me then, if you cannot work, if something has stopped you and you cannot work, then come get me. But if it's like, I didn't understand what that meant, I didn't understand that acronym, you know, how do we handle that? Just put it on a piece of paper and we'll deal with it every day at the end of the day. But initially over-communicate, and then everybody deserves a one-on-one every week.
Cool. Are there any other questions that I didn't ask you but I should have?
I don't really think so. I think, again, like the biggest mistakes, like I say, mishiring hunters is the biggest mistake. But to your point about onboarding, not having a formal onboarding plan, it just, again, like it sort of goes back to just show them the love. If you've actually taken the time to put a 2-week hour by hour onboarding plan together for them, the message it sends is, I cared enough. I want you to be successful. See how badly I want you to be successful. I want, I, you know, those onboarding plans take time when I put them together. They're not easy to put together, and finding time on people's calendars and scheduling that on people's calendars, like, it's time consuming. But again, like, you know, fail to plan to fail. So I want them to think when they come in, like, I want them to be impressed. I want them to say, wow, like, they're like, they've really given this some thought. Like, there's going to be some formal training, and some of, you know, some of it's going to be, you know, on the job training. Some of it's going to be self-directed training. Some of the instructor led training. But the bottom line is, like, they want me to succeed. It's, I can see that in this onboarding plan.
Where can listeners know more about you, connect with you, and tell us more about the services that you're offering?
Absolutely. So I do zero and I do broken. So most of my clients have just gotten some sort of funding. And as a result of that, they're trying to hire their first sales rep or get the first the sales process put together. So I do really four things. Like I've already mentioned, I do hiring help. I do sales training and coaching, of course. I actually do fractional sales leadership or interim sales leadership. So sometimes I come in and play sales leader for as a fraction. So you can kind of split me with other startup founders and get the benefit of some experience. So, and then I do evaluations and strategic planning. So coming in and kind of evaluating what the current situation is. But with most of my early startup founders, which I kind of call zero, I mean, literally I do everything from help you pick a CRM system and implement it and customize it for you, to helping you hire that salesperson, to putting a formal, like, outbound prospecting strategy together, your sales cycle together, doing the sales training along the way. So I kind of say I'm a one-stop shop for all things new startups. And this is the swim lane I love to play in. I've been doing this, like I said, with funded and non-funded companies for 20 years in SaaS. You can find me on LinkedIn, Kristie Jones, KRISTIE. And then, as I mentioned, my website is Sales Acceleration Group. And by the time this goes live, I'll have some resources under Sales Acceleration Group /SaaS Boss. So you can look for some of those interview resources that might be helpful for you.
Awesome. Any last parting words?
Hiring your first sales rep is a critical hire for your company, right? Whether that's employee number one or whether that's employee number 12, this is a critical hire. This is the person that's going to help you take that revenue to the next level. So to give it time, like, put a process together, do some, you know, meet with them two or three times, make sure that they're the right fit. And by all means, please be honest about it, because startups are not for everyone. So if things are a little chaotic and product is half baked and you don't have a handbook and you don't have a dress code and you don't care about dress code or whatever, like, there's no reason not to be transparent. SaaS founders in general are normally transparent, but by all means, be as transparent as you can be, because what you don't want is 60 days later, somebody, like you said, aborting and saying, I did not know what I was getting into, because startups are not for everyone.
Kristie, thank you so much for all those nuggets of wisdom. It's been great.
Thank you, Natalie. I appreciate it. Good luck to everyone. Hire smart.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also, look on the bright side, this is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.